our earlier meditation, which many of you attended, Shanti included what the Christmas message that Swami delivered Christmas 2012. Since he left his body in April 2013, that was actually his last Christmas message. Christmas was always for Yogananda, for Master, for Swamiji, and by extension then for Ananda. Christmas has always been a very big holiday, is the words I want to use. We've always celebrated Christmas in a very dynamic manner. When we were young disciples at Ananda Village in the 70s, Swami was very stern with us that we needed to stay in the ashram at Christmas time, that it was too important a spiritual occasion to dissipate merely with our families. He said it to the point, you know, even if your family disowns you, you should stay, which was quite a statement. He said their egos, he said even if their egos are displeased, their souls will be deeply blessed by your spiritual sincerity, which was quite a statement. I don't think anyone was disowned, but nonetheless, Swamiji himself, just interestingly, let me just gather, I just need the word. Just because I've said it, it's interesting. Swami just lead these enormous Christmas celebrations at Ananda. Then it was, when it was all over on Christmas night, he would drive the 4 hours from Ananda Village down to, his parents lived in Atherton and then Menlo Park. Every Christmas night he would come here. Finally, they took mercy on him and he started coming the next morning. But he would stay entirely for the whole spiritual, and then he would also give his family their due. He was very respectful on all sides of it. But in this last message that he delivered, he just starts right in saying, when he was a young disciple, when he was just 22 years old, when he'd been with Master for 1 month, Master invited him to the desert, to where Master was working on his Gita commentary, and the first thing that Master said was that the three wise men were three of our gurus, Lahiri Mahashaya, Sri Yukteswar, and Babaji. And then Swami says in this message, he said, when I worked on the Revelations of Christ book, he said, I just came to feel that Master must have been Jesus. And he said it just as if he were announcing that. And of course, I heard Swami say that periodically in the last years of his life, but it wasn't until I was watching it just a couple of hours ago that I realized this was his last Christmas message, and he said it unequivocally. And he talked about, very simply, he said, a soul with the compassion of Jesus, and this is what Master said to him, would naturally reincarnate again and again. That a person, and an avatar is just a person who longs so deeply to uplift the world, doesn't just consider the job done. It has to keep repeating. And then Swami talked about Master's incarnations as William and as Ferdinand, and Master repeatedly coming back to preserve some aspect of Christianity. As William, he built up the church and connected England to Rome when England was going more toward the Scandinavian way, which was not so Christian at that time. As Ferdinand, he drove the Moors out of Spain and recaptured it for Christianity. Now, we think so much in terms of the church, and we think about what's going on nowadays, and we think about Jesus' teaching as the people who have co-opted it in the name of religion. But that isn't at all what we're working with. What we're working with is this extraordinary, powerful force of love that is absolutely determined that we ourselves will expand into that infinity of love. And we are working with souls who love so much that no sacrifice is too great for the possibility of even one soul. Master wrote a poem And he said that phrase, I will return, he said again and again, with bleeding feet, crossing crags of suffering, as long as one stray brother is left behind. Now we, who measure our affections so carefully and hoard our energy and protect our vulnerabilities, and I'm not mocking that. That is simply what we do. We have this illusion of separateness. We have this delusion of lack. And so we're always trying to be careful about it. And it's almost impossible for us to imagine the kind of consciousness that counts itself as nothing because it knows itself to be everything. And that still finds so precious that one stray brother that the whole incarnation will be directed if necessary. That's when the masters incarnate. They come to uplift the world, but primarily they come for their disciples. They come for even a very small band to help move them forward. And once that power of a divine incarnation is launched, it's eternal. Man's memory becomes short. And so Zoroaster becomes a little bit dim in the past. Moses is a little dim in the past. And there's names that we don't even know. Jesus is more vivid to us. But once an infinite power like that is launched, it remains with us forever. Master says wherever a self-realized master has been, his consciousness is always there. So we come back to Christmas Eve. And it was the inspiration of Saint Francis, who was trying to revitalize again Christianity in his own way, that we would reenact this beautiful story of the birth of Christ and become childlike and motherly in our enthusiasm so that we would begin to remember. You know, all of divine realization is just remembering. All of this careful protecting of our vulnerabilities is because we have forgotten. Many of you know that I returned to Israel in November for the second trip that I'd taken there. And my two experiences walking in the footsteps of Christ were like night and day, one from another. Equally valid, but exceedingly different. The first time I was there, what I felt was what Swami described in his Christmas message, was this vast impersonal power that simply permeates the universe like a tsunami that just sweeps over everything, and everything is consumed by the force of that. And that it's not that we are unimportant. It's that everything that we consider to be important becomes dissolved as we elevate into that power. I remember standing at the confluence of two rivers at Deva Prayag in wherever it is, on the way up to Badrinath. And you can walk right down to the point. There's no barriers, there's no fences, there's nothing. You just walk right down to this tiny spit of land where there's two huge rivers just come together to make this force. And, you know, you're feeling Mother Nature's power. And I have no suicidal impulse. But in the face of that, you have the realization that how easily you could just slip into that water and you would be gone. And it's not exactly a temptation, but it's a realization that everything that I, all these vulnerabilities that I protect, just Mother Nature could just take it like that, and I would be gone, and there would be a certain kerfuffle behind me. But I would just go like that. Now, that kind of wanton sacrifice of a human body is not divinely sanctioned. But that kind of wanton sacrifice of a human ego is exactly what God is always asking of us. And He's always giving us the chance. He's just always giving us the chance to just let it go. And nonetheless, we hold. So the second time, and so when I, the first time I went to Israel, that was the Jesus that I met, quite unexpectedly. I'd expected to meet the person, but I met the Infinite Spirit, and I came home greatly elevated by the experience, never thinking I would go back, but I was called back a second time. And being there the second time, it was as a disciple. As a disciple of Master, as a disciple of Swami Kriyananda, as a disciple of Jesus. It's all more than my little brain can hold. I have no idea. As a disciple of this ray that we have all been following for a very, very long time. And it's not as if this ray is like better in any way. Within infinity, how can there be better and worse? But for those of us who belong to Jesus, for those of us who belong to Master, for those who belong to Swami or to Babaji or to Sri Yukteswar or to any other Master or Jesus in any way that you understand Him, there is also something so deeply personal about this. It's not personal the way we think it is. It's not personal in that Jesus is the only one, and if I love Yogananda, I have to be loyal to Him, and I can't be loyal to Jesus, and just all of this. It's not personal like that. It's personal in the way it fills us. Swami said that he used to use the phrase impersonal love, and I used to object to it, and he used to ignore me. He would listen politely. He had this way that it took me longer than you would think to notice. He wouldn't argue. Swami never argued. If you weren't receptive, he knew if he had to persuade you, you would just revert. So he never tried to persuade. If you were receptive, he would help. So when I contradicted him, and this is how he treated me, when I contradicted him, he never argued. He would even actually give me the impression that he was listening. Even listening respectfully. But then he would quietly go his own way. And so that word impersonal love I never understood, but he continued to use it until I did understand. He said, impersonal love is that you're impersonal about yourself. This is where I started. It's hard for us to imagine how indifferent the masters are to their individuality because we're so partial to ours. Impersonal love offered is received as profoundly fulfilling to the individual heart. And for those of us who knew Swami Kriyananda, hundreds, I dare say thousands of people around the world, many of whom never met him in person, would write to him and say, I've never met you, but you're my best friend. Because they would feel that impersonal love was so perfect, because so selfless, that deep vulnerability would be assuaged. Because when we know how deeply we are loved by God, you see, all other considerations become as tiny as they actually are. You know, all this that we protect is just confusion. And, you know, being there in the Mount of Transfiguration, the Mount of Temptation, what they call the Rock of Agony. They have these fantastic words. The Rock of Agony, where Jesus lay across it when the night in the Garden of Gethsemane before he was crucified. And Master went to Jerusalem and he said, oh, almost all these places are authentic, that they really are where they were. And you feel yourself just in that aura of power and of love. And the thought crosses your mind, why have I ever been concerned about anything? You know, what could possibly touch me? One of the most interesting experiences I had there was in an odd place, and I don't know whether, you know, and when you're on pilgrimage, you never know what's happening. There, when Jesus was arrested at the Garden of Gethsemane, and it took all night before they brought him to Pilate and then condemned him to be crucified. And during that night, he was moved from place to place, and he was taken to the high priest's house, the house of Caiaphas. And so there's this place that is considered to be was the house of Caiaphas, who was one of the rulers there. And they took Jesus in, and there are these deep grottos under the house, which were either a prison or a wine cellar or who knows what exactly. But it is believed that Jesus was held down there. So we walked down into these caves, which were spacious, but they were well underground. And there was music, and it was beautiful. And I sat there, and this deep karmic fear of being imprisoned, and what I know must be also a karmic memory of being imprisoned, just sort of came into me. And I closed my eyes and realized that we are never alone. And far from feeling the kind of panic claustrophobia, which would be a natural way to feel, I felt a freedom that I've almost never felt in my life, because I realized you could be dark in the dark, you could be alone, you could be unknowing what was going to happen next, you could be abandoned by everyone and still be loved. That all our ideas about what it means to be loved are all just confusion. It's not about earning it or receiving it or any of that. It just is. And that's who Jesus was. That's who all the masters are. They are this personal power of love being given to each of us as individuals until our hearts become large enough to hold everything they have to give. That is the only drama of life. All the rest of this, today, tomorrow, 100 years from now, who will even know? But that, receiving that love in our hearts, we have that forever. I was very deeply conscious, especially when I went where Jesus was crucified. Was I there? I really don't know. But I felt like it doesn't really matter how much time passes. Our divine experiences, the times we are touched by that infinite love, those are the pearls that are strung together that are really the definition of our life. Everything else is just sand blowing in the wind. So let us open our hands, open our minds, open our hearts, open ourselves with everything we have to To all those who received him, John said, to them gave he the power to become as he is, to be also then not only the one who receives, but also the one who can also give.